Accession number 17268, Reel 2.
Tinson himself appeared, it caused quite a bit of amusement, but as it was Tinson, not the shark. On another occasion, there was the usual guard parade in an evening, picket rather than guard, but it was held, I think, 6 o'clock in the evening, 5:45 parade in front of the orderly sergeant, who were duly inspected. But by 5:45, Tinson was due to appear. He was not there, and the orderly sergeant, of course, was looking here and there, when all of a sudden, from behind the tent, appeared a figure riding a donkey, dressed in a galabeard, and rode to the edge of what was a bit of parade sand. Off the back of the donkey was Tinson. Stripped off the galabeard, put it on the back of the donkey, smacked its backside, and Tinson then strutted onto the parade ground sand, and took his place in the amongst the guard, much to the amusement of everyone concerned. A bit later, well, some weeks later on, it was the custom to go to the mess tent and have a beer or two, and even the one of the officers, one of the troop officers, used to join us for a beer or whatever. And there again, it was the custom, if you came in with your hat on, wearing your beret, it was your duty to pay for a round of drinks, whoever was in the mess at the time. Tinson came in on one occasion wearing his hat. Well, at this particular time, we had been ordered to have hair cut very, very short, as we were due to go on the board boat ready for invasion of as to wherever we were going in the next day or two. So our hair had to be cut short. But Tinson came in, I say, with his beret on, and the officer that was there present said, "Tinson, you're wearing your hat off, your round of drinks." Now Tinson took his hat off, beret, bowed his head down to the officer, and of course he'd had his hair cut in a sort of a fringe like a monk. The top of his pate was shaved bare, and he'd painted a face on. Quite amusing. Our stay in Egypt coming to an end, we took our tanks down to Suez, where we boarded LSTs, and so sailed up the Suez Canal and out into the Med. A nice slow cruise along the southern shores of the Mediterranean until we came to Tripoli, where we stayed a few days, and then boarded again, and so set off to where? not until after the second day we knew we were going to invade Sicily. On July the 9th, the weather was very, very rough, and quite a number of the chaps, of course, were seasick, but it stayed that way right until the next day, July the 10th, which was D-Day as far as Sicily invasion was concerned. We held off until landing the day after. Apparently the initial landing had gone quite well, and there was such a lot of traffic to leave ships that we were held back, and the infantry were apparently making good progress. Having landed, we received our orders. As at my squadron, C squadron, they had their job to do. It was entirely different to what we had imagined, as of in all our training. The roads were poor, a lot of outcrops of rock, and the stone walls, and the fields, of course, were covered with olive trees, which made visibility any distance quite difficult. The first few days, it was mainly a case of the odd skirmish, clearing up a few odd machine gun posts here and there, with, in general, the Italian soldiers mainly surrendering, throwing down their arms and coming away with their hands up, literally by the hundred. There was no fight by the Italians. It was not until several days later that we came up against the troops of the German army, where of course resistance was a bit stiffer, in fact well, much stiffer, and there were, well, progress was rather slow, but we did eventually reach some of the major towns that we were supposed to occupy. We were in part in some of the small villages welcomed by the villagers and showered with grapes. I'm fairly sure that some of them, weighing about a pound, were thrown, well, quite strongly. In other words, it was not a welcome.
Here in the southwest corner, southeast corner of Sicily, I can only recall one major battle, and that was for Primosolda Bridge. Here, the Germans were in well-organized defensive positions and had very good sighted anti-tank weapons. Unfortunately, here we lost our colonel. He was killed by a sniper bullet straight between the eyes. Our second-in-command lost an eye, and we also lost a troop leader and several others. Another casualty here was Hedley Verity, who was with the infantry of the Green Howards. Unfortunately, he was also killed. Hedley, of course, was one of the great English spin bowlers before the war. With the help of an airborne drop and good work by the infantry, we were able to eventually take the bridge and so make progress towards Catania, the main seaport on the east coast. After a short while, progressing a few miles daily, eventually the Germans vacated Sicily completely, the Americans having linked up with Monty's army at the north, and we were able to retire to the southern slopes of Mount Etna, where we were able to settle down, maintain the tanks, clean the guns, wash ourselves. The first for strip down wash for many, many weeks. And here again, we were able to catch up on sleep and generally refresh ourselves for the next stage of affairs. Well, out of action, I was able to see my first German Tiger tank, but fortunately it was dead, and I'm glad it was dead. It was really an absolute monster to us, and there again our 75 millimeter was no match for the 88, and there again our armour compared to the armour and weight of the Tiger. I'm glad it was dead. After 3 or 4 weeks at Mr. Bianco, spent of course in rest and relaxation and re-equipping and even reorganisation to a certain extent under our new Colonel, Colonel Sandy Cameron, who came to us from the 4th organiser, 4th Sharpshooters, the 4th CLY. We then got our orders to move to Catania, the seaport, from where we got on LSTs and made our way over to Taranto. In the meantime, of course, on the, I think it was the 10th of September, around about that time, the Italians had surrendered. Of course, getting to Taranto, there was the whole Italian fleet was all tied up doing nothing. I cannot recall much of interest or excitement, great excitement, in those early days on the mainland of Italy. It mainly a case of daily work, move forward, clear up a few pockets here and there, then make progress, take a town, wait for the infantry to come and take over, then move on again. The main object on that side being to capture the airfields at Foggia. When we did get to Foggia, after a little bit of trouble with minefields and a few anti-tank guns, it was a case of going through and into a town which had really been blasted by our heavy bombers. And as a driver, it was quite a job to pick your way through rubble, broken down wires, cables, over-bombed out bomb craters, very, very difficult until we cleared the town and got to the other side to be out into the open country. There we had to wait for, there again, for the infantry to come and occupy the town. At this time I was driver to the troop sergeant, Rye Bryant. And with him we had one or two very, very good times. When I say good times, things happened. For instance, just before Foggia, we had to try to force a crossing across a river. I think it was called Sevaro, something like that. And all the bridges had been destroyed, of course, by the retreating Germans. So we motored down the river trying to find a crossing. Unfortunately, four of our tanks went off the road and across country and, of course, got stuck in the mud. And Roy ordered me to reverse, and we started to pull the others out, because I was driving and Roy was with a tow rope fixing it to the other tanks, and we did manage eventually to pull them out. But of course, all this time we were under considerable fire from an 88 and a tank of some sort. But fortunately, the other tanks of the squadron were able to accommodate these and destroy them. We were able to carry on making progress. Rivers were the general thing from then on. Everywhere we went, it was a case of climb a rise, get to the top, and down the bottom of there in the valley was a river. With the Germans on the other side and occupying the ridge at the top. This went on all the way, right the way up to the River Sangro. But before then, we'd come to the top of one rise, and we halted in some trees. Actually, taking a bit of a breather and waiting for other things to catch up behind. Anyway, we sat on top of this ridge and looking around. Even I, as driver, used my eyes, and I looked a long way ahead, and I worked it out with the normal routine method, and I worked it out to be about 4,500 to 5,000 yards away, quite a fair distance. So it was not really plain as to what it was, but I thought it was a gun not far away from a farmhouse. I spoke to Roy in the turret through the microphone and told him just where about, in which particular field, and Roy, through his binoculars, said he thought it was a farm cart. We sat there a long time, but I was still very, very suspicious and kept looking at this. I borrowed the binoculars, and I could not really make certain that it was a gun or a farm cart. Anyway, eventually, looking out, I saw a flash, smoke, and within seconds we were hit. But fortunately, it hit the turret flap to the over the commander. Roy would obviously be there with looking out, eyebrows only, and this shot must have been armour piercing, just struck and took one of the turret flaps, sheared it completely off. I automatically started the engines. But at the same time, the co-driver reached over and slammed the gear lever into reverse, and we retired from off the skyline, so did the other two tanks of the troop. Next day, the 88 gun that fired at us was found deserted, but had been naturally dismantled, spiked. The next river to cause a problem was the Biferno, at the end of which is a port, Termoli, on the Adriatic Sea. Here, the Marine Commandos had made a landing to occupy the town, and it was hard to get through to them, to give them armoured protection. C Squadron, my squadron, were to cross the river and go into the town. The other squadron was to occupy the, look after the high ground inland. Unfortunately, the river was in full flood, and only four of our squadron, four tanks of our squadron, were able to get through the river. I managed to keep my engine going with the water within about 4 inches of the driver's hatch. So it was very, very deep, and that is why only four of us managed to get through. One driver stalled behind, and that, of course, stopped all the rest of the squadron from coming through also. Here was the four tanks that did get through, made our way towards Tamale, and made contact with the Royal Marine Commandos, who told us they'd heard tank movement way out near the brickworks. So we made our way in the direction of the brickworks, for where we could see the chimney stack. Just four tanks, and unfortunately, that day I was driving a new man, new to the regiment, a second lieutenant, and this was his very first day of action. During that day, a very busy day, C Squadron, a very depleted C Squadron, knocked out in all a total of 6 German tanks. I'm sure we would have had more had the commander of my particular tank been more experienced. At one stage, going towards the brickwork, coming across our front, were 4 German Mark IV tanks, absolutely straight ahead and side on. The commander saw them and absolutely panicked without giving the gunner any instructions whatsoever, started screaming to the gunner, "Fire hardy, fire hardy, fire hardy." But Sam Hardy did not know what he was going to fire at and was being pestered from up above to fire, so of course he put his foot on the pedal and fired. Where the shot went, nobody knows, but our commander then, I'm afraid, did ask for a reverse, asked me to reverse the tank and away from, in case these German tanks were going to fire us. Obviously we had missed anything. Well, they were a real easy target, and unfortunately, I say, in panicking, he told me to reverse, which I did, and of course without any directions came to a bend in the road, and of course I reversed into a ditch, and there again more panic. He started screaming down his microphone, "You bloody fool, you bloody fool, you've ditched us." Of course, I'd had a little bit too much of, incompetence from above. I merely picked up my microphone and I said, "Oh, shit in it," and was able to pull forward and get back onto the road. There again, with help, I did manage to keep going in reverse into some trees. where unfortunately there again there was weapon pits containing the commandos. There again, unfortunately, in reversing uncontrolled without direction, I unfortunately ran over a weapon pit with two commandos in. Very, very unfortunate for the two poor chaps that was in it. Later that evening, we did pull back into the town and merely sat at a crossroads, pointing out towards where the Germans were, just in case there was any counter-attack. The regiment that day had fought many hard battles, all the squadrons, those out on the ridge and C squadron itself. We had many casualties, unfortunately, but I'm pleased to say the Germans had many more. The next 3 or 4 days were really hard fighting. Here we were joined by a Canadian tank regiment who took some of the strain, and after, say, 3 or 4 days, we were then pulled back into reserve. We were out of action about 3 weeks, during which time our tank strength was increased because we were down to less than 30 tanks after the Battle of Termini. We also had new officers and recruits to the regiment. Unfortunately, I feel we had someone to take the place of the sub-lieutenant who didn't do very well on his first day in battle. The next major obstacle was the River Sangro. Here again, after very heavy rains, the river was in flood and the bridge blown. Here again, on the approaches to the river, the roads were very, very wet. In fact, were absolutely muddy, very, very deep. And many tanks, of course, got bogged down. There again, by good driving, by good luck or what, I was one of 4 tanks that were able to get down to the river and cross through at a ford, which meant that there were 4 tanks across the river, and we were very welcomed by the infantry bridgehead that was holding the northern bank. After several days, the main attack went in, preceded, of course, by a large artillery barrage, which was conducted by our Colonel Sandy Cameron, who now and again, well, every 4 minutes actually, the timing was, he would say, lift now, and the artillery would lift 100 yards, but unfortunately, in climbing up the bank, the artillery were a little bit slow, and several of their shells were falling amongst us. As a driver, of course, we wore headphones to receive instructions from the commander up in the turret, but frequently he was too occupied to give much in the way of orders for direction. Our main objective was to get to the top of the ridge. Here, it was a case of wending our way through olive groves and over rocks and various paths to find our way to the top of the ridge. Despite the wearing headphones, we could hear a lot of the noise from the outside, the crump of shells, and also it was here, during this climb to the ridge, that we first came across the
Nebelwerfer, the Moaning Minnie, the German multi-barreled mortar. The moaning noise was not very pleasant and was a little bit frightening, but the main object was to concentrate on driving to get to the top of the ridge. We in C Squadron did eventually get to the top of the ridge and made sure of that we'd crossed the road and sat in the holding position while A Squadron, who were following on behind, cleared up lots of pockets of infantry and the various prisoners.